good morning. A little delayed, about 35 minutes took us to get a little tech support here at Kentucky Downs, back at Kentucky Downs, after the 2 days at the Keeneland sale. And I sure hope that the bottom doesn't drop out with me having shifted tack down here, because what has gone on for 2 days at Keeneland is absolutely insane. And I know we'll talk about it with Sid Fernando in a few minutes. Dick Powell's going to join us shortly. Joe Vellante is here, a voice that'll be instantly recognizable to you because you hear him twice a day on the show when the EPO Equine line gets advertised. And had fun here yesterday. I spent I left about an hour into the session. Of course, there was $1 million seller immediately. Another $9 million hips yesterday. I don't even know what to say. We'll let Sid riff. And Sid, I believe Sid is there as of today. He was hoping to get there for Tuesday. We thought maybe we would have a live session with Sid Fernando for Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And certainly Hill and Dale products off to a very good start, led by Curlin. But we'll see what Sid's thoughts are at Keeneland, and we'll start to look ahead into book two. You just have to assume that there's any number of buyers that have been rebuffed, essentially, and that are going to be, you know, aggressive. Really, the scenario we talked about yesterday with Jessica Martini, and also with Nicole, and with Cormac, and with Tony Lacey as well. That the further you get into the sale, the with this kind of competition, the more difficult it's going to get to find those hips, find those products that are difference makers, at least, you know, instantly recognizable as such. And there's client bases out there that are quite willing to pay the high six and into the seven figures, as evidenced by what we're seeing. So we will do the sales conversation with Sid. We'll talk a little Hong Kong with Dick Powell shortly. Right now, I want to say hi to Joe, who's not only did Joe come out for the early edition, and he also is staying down in Nashville, and he found a place called Dozen Bakery and brought some absolutely gorgeous pastries and a baguette that kind of a ficelle, as we yes. call it in Montreal. But out of this world, Joe. Well done.
No. Thank you. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Good morning.
Pleasure to be here. This is a wonderful, wonderful place. Never been, and had a great day yesterday and today. Looking forward to more of the same. But I highly advise, recommend anybody to come out here.
Yesterday was made even more special by your son's horse's win in the nightcap. And I can add that I've now been in a photo at Kentucky Downs, because it was me and you and Whit Beckman. Congratulations to Whit. I want to get Whit on the show. Another one of the young horsemen out there that we talked to Josh Blum yesterday, who's aspiring. There's so many, you know, I mean, I don't want to call them kids. I am 62. There are, you know, young people that are going to roll the dice. They want to be in the business. They want to train. They want to hang a shingle. And Whit, who worked for Todd Pletcher, who worked for Chad Brown, both for periods, you know, extensive periods, as polished, you would think, as any young horseman in the country. And they, as we talk so often, just need a chance, just need some stock. And your son provided Legion Bloodstock, and Christian is going to swing into action up at Keeneland as the week proceeds.
Yeah, their Legion Bloodstock's doing phenomenal. Travis Kerr. Yeah, and Christian and a couple other guys. They they're involved in all kinds of stuff. They're doing great. And Witt is a good friend of Christian's and really sharp guy. Like you said, just needs the horses. And if, you know, you can't make you can make a good chicken sandwich out of chicken something, but you can't make a filet mignon out of it. So you know, Witt is, as he gets better horses, will produce for sure. I mean, his pedigree is too good, and he's too good of a horseman. So I was glad to see that they won yesterday with Sabalenka. It was like a $35,000 purchase or something in April, I believe, but it was a really good score. And I know I'm biased, but they're as sharp as they come, those guys.
Sabalenka had to survive. I guess it was the photo. I thought
photo,
there was never an inquiry.
Never. It was just a photo. It was just taking a while. It was the end of the day. And I guess they wanted to leave, and they're like, oh, well, we forgot to make sure, I guess.
I know, we weren't sure. We saw the little red letters on the bottom of the screen. I thought, what's going on here? What's taking so long? But eventually came in and a nice end to the day. And today, the end of the meet. We'll touch base with Hammer, who is... I'll let Hammer detail what's transpired. We'll talk to him in a little bit by phone. The fact that he's not here, you might be able to connect some dots. And I'll just simply say, you know, under the weather. I've got the analysis for races 5 through 12 already up at the website. We'll check on the scratches. On this card, three more stakes today, and it starts with the Juvenile, 4:57 Central, and then the Gunrunner and the One Dreamer. The One Dreamer has been run here a good long while, and then the whole meet closes with a two-year-old filly, maiden special, going a mile. A couple of good allowances splattered around here, and the middle pick five starts with a handicap. That's quite interesting, actually. Wesley Ward, Duke of Hazzard, square enough morning line price. As usual, there's going to be opportunities when it comes to taking swings on this final day. And looking at yesterday for a quick minute, Mike Maker early on from Mark Breen, getting things going. Maker has been just absolutely just impossible to stop here. That was actually the first race from the other day, part of the I've got them stacked together. So, you know, if you combine the Sunday card with yesterday's card, the remainder, the nine races, Blame the Good Times, which we cashed with Brian Lynch. Then the action yesterday, Chad Brown and Judmont with Aerobatic, $9 and change. Another Arrogate, just unbelievable, whether they're threes or two-year-olds. Sugarfix, a winner for Safi Joseph, who's won a few here, and that with Edgar Zayas. The upset, Paulo Lobo, who just does such a great job. The man who brought you Farda Amiga, one of my absolute favorites, and Carabin Dorata at 18-1. This was the toughest horse of the day, and the early multi-race wagers. How about Brett Calhoun for Silverton Hill with one of their homebreds, the Twirling Candy, Sutherland. Thought that Sutherland made a lot of sense. Had that one on top. Bad Beat Brian was interesting. Bad Beat Brian got bet off the board early and then actually floated back up a little bit. Got, I think, as low as 7-2, ultimately paid 12.52 and got a very clever ride from Chris Amy, trained, of course, by wife Brittany Vandenberg. And Amy just absolutely lit out with Bad Beat Brian and then coasted home, had built up probably a 6-8 length lead at some point, a Jack Milton gelding that was 10-1, which was a kind of a silly morning line, but pays 12.52. You had the stake, the first stake, the Untappable, and Alluring Angel got off to a bad start for George Abreu and Larry Goichman. And that gave Dance Macabre essentially first run. And Dance Macabre for Kelsey Danner, who's been
won a lot here,
big
yeah.
time. And not just here, too. She won Colonial.
Yeah.
She had the winner. The horse that absolutely cost me the late action. freedom speaks. And after the win, I went back and I realized that I kind of whiffed on freedom speaks in that Music City stake. And Freedom Speaks with Jose Lascano, who's done okay here. This Maya Engelhart for Carol Reitman and a American Freedom Philly, the three-year-old girls in here. And you almost had a mammoth. You would have had a $35 winner. Happy Soul, the Wesley Ward. That absolutely just missed. Adventuring basically could not be reeled in by Family Way. Family Way was 4-5, Adventuring was 3-1, so you got 780. Those were really the only two you needed to use, and that got you to Sabalenka, who ended up going off favored just a tick under 3-1 and paid 754 for Whit Beckman Legion Racing, and of course the division of Legion Bloodstock, and the pick five paid 1791. And wow. $200 basically for the pick four. So as usual, the mutuals and the work you put in, and if you can connect those dots, you're going to get paid. Yeah. I mean, there was nobody in that late pick five that was impossible.
Right. What I find here is two things. Even when you have a really good opinion, you don't have a really good opinion, because it's just there's so many variables at this place, more so others, that even when I've handicap something I think I really like, I generally don't. Like, I just won't be as confident as I'm other places. And two is, as you say all the time, which I got to be the worst person in America at this, is building tickets. I am so horrible at betting my money. I can handicap winners just with anybody, but I can't cash a ticket because I just don't put them together. And this place, you really need to be able to put tickets together, because there's so many opportunities and so many horses that have a chance.
Yeah, you really have two. You got two options depending on your bankroll. You can back it up. And in fact, even somebody that's as experienced a player as Kenny Kirchner, saw Kenny the other day and we were talking strategy. And he actually, he's the originator, of course, of the reverse tri-key that we talk about so often. It came out of a conversation at Churchill probably 12 years ago, with 2009 or 10, when Churchill had the back-to-backs. Yeah. Breeders' Cups. And I said to Kenny, how do you bet Breeders' Cup races? And he said, I reverse tri-key, and I had not ever heard the term. I said, what do you mean? He said, I take a long shot. I take four, five, six horses, first and second, you know, 5x4, 6x5, 3x2, whatever, with a late closing bomb. Hmm. He said, if you go through the history of Breeders' Cup charts, you will see countless 30, 40-1 shots that clunk up for third, and with logicals.
Right.
And because of the size of the fields and the depth of the pools, they end up paying outlandish trifecta prices. So Kenny taught us that, and Kenny said he uses it here quite a bit.
Try that today.
Well, I'll tell you one, it's funny you say that, because the way I put my plays up today, we had a gorgeous day yesterday. It's a gorgeous day today. This course is firm. Nobody should be hanging on the rain that we had, you know, back on Sunday, and even the little bit of rain we had Saturday. You can forget about that. It has been, an easy bake oven out there for 72 straight hours, and it's already probably 80 degrees this morning and gorgeous. So by the time we start running these races, that course is going to be not rock hard, but I'm sure toes dig in, but the speed will continue to have every opportunity. There are some races today, though, that's funny. There are a couple of races that have got a preponderance of speed. There's a couple where it's kind of speed neutral.
Right.
So do not, if you think there's a horse that's got a very good chance to, you know, to take them all the way or sit an upfront close trip, the course should benefit them. So as a result, I mean, in terms of my approach today, I reached for some prices that I normally would pick second as maybe a best value with the most likely winner. And I put them third as the best value because I think they're going to be a little hard-pressed to reel in
the speed,
the horses up front. I mean, especially, you know, if there's two, three horses, sometimes more, that are sparring on the front end, one or two of them are going to go on. There may be a couple that fall away, especially as they come up the hill. So I have found this. I've always enjoyed playing here, and it is a bit of a stab fest, and you just acknowledge that. But when it comes to the two-year-olds, you got all kinds of pedigree plays to make it fun and interesting. There's a horse today, in fact, I'll mention, that I think is a very tough decision. The maiden special with the two-year-olds today. Let's take a look at this. I'll try to reach. I haven't reached out to Joe Kristofek yet, but I'm going to reach out to Joe, who's been just terrific. They've had so much fun with Joe. The maiden race.
Second race?
No, it's what is the juvenile stake? Where the hell am I? Oh, it's the 12th. It's that last race. I mentioned Paulo Lobo.
Yeah.
Well, he's got a hard-spun filly here that's a half to Ivar.
Well.
Making a second start and went a mile at Ellis and didn't do much running at 6-1. Comes out of that race that produced Chop Chop that went on to stake try. So what do you do with Navy Fleet? It's actually very funny. There's there's Navy Fleet for Paulo Lobo, and then there's Navy Goat for Arno Delacar, an Army Mule. They went from Army Mule to Navy Goat, which is kind of cute, the Jacksons. This is a Belvedere Farm Army Mule filly that fetched $450,000 at OBS.
I'm going to give you one in that race. Oh, Pollyanna, the 5.
Yeah.
Matt Shire, a young guy, does a great job.
Yep.
And he was telling me in Saratoga that he was high on a couple two-year-olds, this being one of them. And, after the first race, off the turf at Ellis, I think, that can only help him dramatically. And at 12-1, that horse will be prominent on my ticket. You know, for sure. And you mentioned Paulo Lobo. What a good guy he is. And have you ever been out to the training center where his barn is?
No.
On Paris Pike there? You know, the training center that Keeneland owns?
High Point?
Yeah. I guess that's what they call it. No, High Point is Churchill, right?
No.
The Thoroughbred Training Center.
Oh, the Thoroughbred Training Center. Okay.
You know, they have like 8 or 10 new barns there. Oh, my God, Steve. They're like Fairhill quality barns they
nice.
Built. And Paulo's got a giant one, double wide shed rows, and it's beautiful. And he has a phenomenal operation over there. Does a great job.
Speaking of High Point, a horse that in that nightcap that I did put on the ticket, Jeff Hiles, who's had a terrific meet here. Jeff Hiles has got a first-time starter, Take It South. This is a tonalist out of a Curlin mare. And from a pedigree standpoint, there's some sibling strength in here and pedigree power. I had to use Parcells' horse from George Weaver, bringing in off the Saratoga try that just missed that letter of gold that's going to be a short price. I used Revenue Train, the Mike Maker, Lord Nelson. Michael Dubb and Mike Caruso. And, of course, Caruso, formerly the nom de course of Bethlehem Stables. And now everything's running under Michael's name. And then, Shug's got self-confident in here. 8-1, Inner Mischief out of the Phipps Homebred out of Sabbatical. So this is a very quirky way to finish the meet.
Yeah. We were talking before we went on the air that with that Vincent Chaminade, I love the way he rides that kid. Noticed him at Keeneland when he was like 1-for-30, but you could see when you got talent, you just need some horses, and he sits really good on a horse. I mean, for little as I know technically about it, just watching millions of races over my life, he's really. I would definitely use him if I was a trainer for sure.
Well, the rest of this card, there's no shortage of numbers and prices that you might be able to latch on to. Michelle Boyce shows up in here with the second level allowance, 8th. I thought Summer Assault, 12-1, was usable and interesting. How about Anna Maya with the Fiddle in the maiden 7th for the 3-and-ups? Shug's got a favorite in there, Point Well Taken. There's also 7-2, Asmussen Rosario, Amaryllis Kiss. Shug and Asmussen are going to be the favorites in there. There's a horse, Too Many Twizzlers is going to be a popular play, I think, and focus in that 6th race. I thought Blue Norther had a look in here for Johnny Ortiz. as well, 10-1. The typical Kentucky Downs, you know, latch on to something. And of course, any horse that is run here successfully, gets extra points.
Huge advantage, yeah, because some just don't like it. It's too big, too wide. It's kind of looking around, get lost, and up and down some hills, and just not something they're used to doing. And I guess mentally, some of them are not prepared for it. But Johnny Ortiz, he's one of my guys. Another guy does a great job, phenomenal everywhere he races. That's the beauty here, right? You look at races, and there can be five or six different angles you're going to use or that you want to use, and all of them fit in one race. So it comes down to, for me anyway, just a guess at between those four or five, which ways do I see the race unfolding, and then hoping at the end that I'm close to being right.
Well, that's what it is. And it's one of those places where you're praying at the base of the stretch. If you're up on the lead,
right,
you're like, where's the wire? And the wire's not coming, folks. The wire is
a long way back,
and not to mention being uphill. So, yep. Although you know, with the course a little bit at this point firm, clearly firm. You got a better chance under this scenario than you did last week. Last week, and who'd I discuss this with the other day? We talked about the unusual, I won't call it a flip-flop, but the unusual pendulum swing of successful style here. And it also includes, you know, the fact that they put up a temporary rail and they save it for that second Saturday. And so then all of a sudden you got the inside portion, you know, that's fresh ground. Last year, it was death. You didn't want to be there.
Right.
This year, going back to Saturday, it was a big benefit to run over the new ground. So
you got to pay attention. You definitely do here. Like, yesterday, I think, was it maybe a transitional day, if I'm saying it right, where there were horses winning up front. You know, and then there were horses winning from behind where, you know, like you said, in the bad weather generally, it all come from behind just because the big uphill on the last 16th of a mile. So today, maybe, like you said, harder, firmer, transition more to speed favoring the majority of the races.
We're going to stay here, top of the hour. We got the late start, so we'll probably just take one break in the middle of the show this morning. Dick Powell is going to join us after we talk to Sid Fernando. And we were hoping maybe in-person visit with Sid. We didn't get to see Sid at Saratoga this summer, so I thought maybe we would see him at Keeneland. But my tack shifted, and now Sid comes into town. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you, Steve?
Excellent. And boy, Sid, you've been involved a long time with breeders and with decision making on pedigree and broodmare bands. You've probably attended I don't know how many sales over the years. These first 2 days, I don't think really, other than in the absolute crazy, I don't know, the 80s, right? Haven't seen a frenzy like this in a long time.
Yeah, it's really amazing that, I think there were $22 million yearlings in book one for the first 2 days. And, you know, last year it was 11. And the average price, is over $500,000. I think it's like $516,000. So it's pretty wild.
22 million dollar sellers. There were 15 all of last year. You've got all of book two and maybe even, you know, an isolated hip or two in book three for more of this. And you know, one thing, Sid, that you know, you can take this anywhere you want. I've got the summary pages in front of me. It's pretty eclectic, and you know, there's some interesting names that bubble to the surface. Certainly, day one, the Mike Rapoli, I'll say juggernaut again. I mean, Rapoli is showing up now, you know, 2 years in a row, grabbing everything he can get his hands on.
Yeah. You know, it's so incredible because this trend of groups getting together and buying Colts, particularly, was a big trend. You know, we've always talked about it, but, you know, Phillies are selling incredibly well, too. I mean, I think on the first day out of the top five, three of the top five, I think we're Phillies. You know, it's tough to sometimes get a gauge when you're on the ground floor because that, it just seems like everything is selling huge, and then you need to temper it by at the end of the day going through the results. But that first day, you know, it's really a wide group of people buying. And sometimes, you know, here's the thing that happens is, you know, you get the buyer's name, but you don't know who eventually will be part of that horse, too.
That's true.
That's one of the things that happens now. You know, people buy the horse, and then they try to get the money around that horse by, you know, putting partnerships together. And then, you know how we've talked about these partnerships? Well, sometimes you get some individuals are, like, cross-pollinating their parts of different horses, too. So it's really a whole new era, I think, in bloodstock now and racehorse ownership at the top of the game because, you know, people are taking pieces of various horses. And then, of course, you know, you've got your regular groups. You've got, it's very difficult for, I was talking to some people, you know, it's tough to buy because you've got, you know, your SF Bloodstock group, SF Matticat and Starlight, that's how they list themselves as buyers. But of course, then, you know, you've got all those other people in their groups that later are become owners of it. So that's one group. You've got, you know, you had this, you've had the David and Gordo group with Woodford Racing, which is Bill Farish, partnering with, you know, Tala Racing. You don't know who else will fill into those. Winchell has been buying. It's a frenzied market, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Yeah. A couple of notes here. So far, I meant we started with Mike Rapoli and his connection, 13 that Jacob West signed for, four Rapoli stables, $5,150,000. So an average of $400,000, essentially, with those 13 hips. But then the Rapoli and Viola purchases, eight more, averaging $500,000 for $4 million. Then there's Rapoli and Coolmore bought one for the $1.1 million, and then Rapoli and the Lowe's, Bob and Luana Lowe, $775,000, and of course Lowe's are also clients of Todd Pletcher. We should really mention that at the top of the sales sheet, I don't want to shortchange Don Adam. Don Adam with six purchases, averaging $933,000, Sid, $5.6 million, and I'm imagining that Shug will get the majority of those. We talked, Joe Galanti's with me, and we talked yesterday with Brendan Walsh. Brendan is going to be the lucky recipient of some of these horses that Richard Knight has purchased. He's bought a total of five for $4.1 million, averaging $830,000, and Brendan says he's getting at least, you know, a few of those.
And Graham Motion is getting some of those, from what I read.
There you go. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Winchell, and, of course, we're here at Kentucky Downs, which is as if Ron needs any other mechanisms to print money between Tappet and Gunrunner. There's a little matter of these of that building over there that that houses a bunch of HHR machinery. Winchell shoring up some Philly purchases that ultimately will end up in the Broodmare band. We've got a nice smattering, Sid, of Japanese purchase. Mr. Mori, for instance, and there was some concern about the strength of the dollar maybe impacting international interests.
Yeah, and, the Judmont bought, of course,
Shadwell.
Coolmore bought us as well, and Coolmore, MD Magger got the Justify Colt, I think for like $1.1 million. So there were certainly, some international buying as well, but really what struck me was the amount of domestic buying that, seems like every big entity was involved. I mean, Claiborne bought that early in the sale of the Quality Road Philly for $1.2 million. And Mandy Pope bought a Quality Road Colt for $1.1 million. So, Bob Baffert's going to be getting a bunch of these. Alba Family Trust, by the way, too. They raced Not This Time, Redden, and they bought that. They bought a Colt for like $850,000. Peter Branch. It's Donato Annie has been signing his agent for some that are not, part of the SF group themselves. You've got the Windstar buying group that they signed as Maverick Racing. And they have, they've gotten into a partnership with Sienna Farm, which is Anthony Manganaro. Sienna, of course, is also one of the partners in Flightmind. So you see how there's, partners and some are into others as well. It's quite something. And, it's been packed. It's been really packed. So there's a lot of traffic here.
Well, and as we discussed yesterday with Cormac Brown and with Tony Lacey, looking at some of the, the obvious players, the Into Mischief is certainly no news at the top of the sheet when there's, been 29 of them offered and sold through. Quality Road with just a outstanding, outstanding numbers. And in fact, I think on average leads, 762,000. Curlin averaging over 600,000 per offer. Gunrunner, 559,000. Constitution, Sid, it seems like there he is kind of shouldered in amongst the heavy hitters, and yet his name doesn't come up in the same hushed tones. But certainly, this sale may be a little bit of a breakout scenario for him.
Yeah, he had those two, I think one for 1.8 and maybe the other for 1.3 million. Both from Bred by China Horse Club, raised at Windstar. One was purchased by Dana Bernhardt, who I don't know. And the other by Richard Knight Bloodstock, kind of a a new name in there too, I think.
Yeah.
But he's a, you know, he was in the same crop as, he started out the same year with American Pharoah, and of course, you know, he had that, he's had some, you know, he's getting the rebound of, as they showed, you know, with the first crop and the second crop doing so well, you know, people start bringing the good mares to them again, and we're seeing some of the effects of that. As you pointed out, Quality Road, I mean, he's really been super popular here. I mean, one for $2.5 million, that's consigned by Stonehaven Steadings. That was purchased by Tala Racing in Woodford. Woodford, of course, Bill Farish, and West Point was involved in that too. So that's at $2.5 million. But then Quality Road had another one for $1.3 million and another for $1,150,000 and another for $1.1 million. So he ends up with four, if I'm not mistaken, four horses, seven figures. One, let's see, one, two, three, four, no, I'm sorry, five. My God. That, yeah, that's really something else. And, of course, his son, City of Light, had one for $1 million, one for $1.1 million. And, you know, his first crop is just two this year. Of course, you know, he isn't like one of the big two-year-old sires yet this year, but, you know, the feeling with this line, Quality Road and City of Light, right? Yeah. They are expected to, you know, be better at three. It's got the physiques kind of to, you know, big rangy horses with athleticism. And, you know, that size is another thing that people really look for here as well. But, yeah, all the big, you know, Quality Road, Curlin, Into Mischief, Medaglia d'Oro, having a hell of a sale. Good proven stallions. Are right there, and then, you know, young horses like Justify, with his first crop too, and how they're doing, and then these constitutions that, you know, have crept in here. Gunrunner, of course, had a, you know, people are onto him, although, you know, when you're thinking of these horses, remember, for example, let's take Gunrunner, for example, because first crop is age three, right? His second crop is age two, so the yearlings are the third crop. So that's pretty amazing for yearlings from a third crop to do as well, because historically, you know, you're going to get weaker mares in your third and fourth crops. So when you're looking at some of these horses, you have to understand where they are in that cycle. And you can tell the ones that are in that really up cycle with the performance they've had, that they're also in that cycle of getting really good mares. Constitution, the two I mentioned though, but you know, horses like Quality Road, he's at that stage where he's got the performance and he's getting the big mares with him. Of course, Into Mischief is a no-brainer. But, you know, Justify, these are second crop Justified, so it's not as bad as a third or fourth a year horse. But, there's, you know, there's competition for mare quality among all these big sires. So a lot of the times when you're, you know, looking at these results, you can see which farms have really been able to get the pedigrees, the big families, the good mares, these horses that are showing up with their yearlings right now. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you're not seeing, for example, you're not seeing Capit all over the place in this area, because he's had to compete against some of these horses. I think the highest price Tappet so far, and, you know, he's got Flight Line going for him. But the highest price Tappet was, I think, $775 so far. Judmont bought a filly. That might end up being a bargain purchase. So as we are looking at some of the surprising prices for, like, the Tappet Sun Constitution, you look at Tappet himself, and, you know, he's not cracking the million-dollar horses. You look at where he is in his stud career at the later parts of it, and the type of mares he's going to attract have to compete with the quality roads, Curlins, so forth, and, you know, perhaps some of that mare quality is showing, but he's also a stallion who made his way by, you know, like his first few crops, getting horses like Hanson, for example, mares that had no pedigree. So in this light, he's actually a really good buy, believe it or not, because he doesn't require a lot of pedigree.
You know what could also,
you know, you think about.
Well, and in fact, I'll give you another parallel, Sid. How about the parallel, similarly, Omaha Beach and Warfront? Right now, Omaha Beach is the most prominent first crop sire on the ledger, and he's outpacing his sire Warfront in terms of average.
You know, that's such a great point you made there, because the highest priced Warfront was only $550, and then it's $400, $300, $175, $130, $50, which is insane. I'll tell you why, because Warfront is incredible value right now at stud at $100,000, and with what we're seeing with these courses, because he gets the highest percentage of black type winners to fold of any stallion at stud right now. And, you know, the thing with him is, if you look at Hip 227, filly by Warfront, Belladonna bought it, so that's a client of David Engordo. And Engordo actually showed me this filly. Beautiful filly, went through, you know, confirmationally with him and everything. And I'm not surprised to see that he's involved in the purchase of this filly, because, and he and I were talking about that with the Warfront. You know, we both discussed part of the fall off with him is because he's perceived as a turf horse. And when Engordo was showing me this filly, he said, this is a dirt filly for him. So, you know, that's the feeling he had and so forth. But the reality is that Warfront has been kind of categorized more as a turf horse now. Excuse me. And that's taken a bit of a toll on him. I see actually here that signed under Engordo Bloodstock himself was another Warfront, Hip 37, out of Shamrock Rose for $175,000. That's a bargain in this marketplace we're talking about.
Well, the judgment will come. pretty far down the road when it comes to figuring out who, you know, who made, you know, savvy purchases. It's so funny, Sid, that, I asked a couple of people over the last 2 days there, you know, what are you concentrating on? And, you know, there's certain people we talk to a lot, including Mark Cassie, for instance, that will literally be there till the last horse, the 3,974th horse goes through the ring. And you know, we'll get to a point down the road and we'll say, oh my God, look at this. You know, this one was 45,000 in book
yeah,
five.
Exactly.
You just, it's one of those incredible mercurial elements here. But the bottom line is that, and everybody we talked to the 2 days there agreed just that considering how many people want to characterize the industry as in some sort of, you know, chaotic death spiral. In the meantime, purses are strong. Interest is strong. The bloodstock trade is as strong as it's been in ages. When you start comparing sales results to 2007, that'll tell you, where we are. So, I know there's some that no matter what news comes forth across the wire, they'll find a way to, you know, to disparage the game and the industry. But the facts seem to, you know, throw it right in their face.
Well, yeah, I mean, the facts of the sales so far through for 2 days is just unbelievable, right? Facts are facts.
That's it. Figs don't lie, as we say about buyers and Thoroughgraphs and Ragazzins and so forth.
How have you enjoyed your journey into Kentucky? And have you been?
It's been great. I feel like Johnny Appleseed to some degree. I'm kind of just, you know, wandering around. And in fact, I even had to make a zip over through Louisville after the sale, because I'll be there later tonight. But I had to bring dry cleaning to Highland Cleaners on Bardstown Road, so that I'll have clothes for the back half of the trip.
How long is this trip in for you? How long is this trip going to be?
It started on Labor Day.
Oh, my God.
Started on Labor Day, and we will be here today. We'll be at Churchill tomorrow and Friday. We'll be at Churchill for the big Saturday card. And then Sunday, we will head back to Erie, where I was drafted to help promote Masters, the big grade 2 sprint race, Monday night at Presque Isle. So we started at Presque Isle the Tuesday after Labor Day, and we'll wind it down back at Presque Isle.
What, is Tina with you or not?
No, she's got school. She's got the
so who's
the children must learn. Rick Hammerly. Hammer's been the running mate. I got Joe Vellante here, Christian Vellante's dad, who of course has EPO Equine, and Christian. And Travis Durr, Legion Bloodstock. So there's been like a co-host, or, you know, I had Lenny Shulman with me yesterday promoting his book about Phyllis George, for those that haven't had a chance to listen from yesterday. That was great. He and Paul Volpone wrote a Phyllis George biography.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Yeah. Just out.
This is quite a long trip for you. This is quite a big trip for you, I guess. I saw your meatball recipe up there, sweet and sour meatballs, but I haven't seen too much other food along the way.
It's true, actually. We have not been able to celebrate. I do have, now. Joe is one of the great gourmands of the Delaware Valley. He's a Philadelphia resident, and as strong as my resume is for dining pushes, Joe Vellante he is no doorknob when it comes to that. You don't have to worry. So, no, Joe's helpful. He's down in Nashville. He found a bakery, Sid, that unbelievable. I'll put up pictures of what Joe brought. Let's also be honest. You come to Kentucky, it's not for the food. It's not necessarily.
Yeah.
There's certain pedestrian things that I love. You know, the pimento cheese and the country ham. You know, things like that. But it's not. Right.
Not for the gourmet.
Right.
Sure.
Ed DeRozan. I think he lived. Yeah, he lived in Kentucky and. You know, he was one of those guys always posting stuff, but it wasn't my cup of tea, like Skyline Chili or, it was like chili with like a wall of cheese on top of it on a bed of spaghetti, right?
I will admit, Sid, I did stop on the drive down. I stopped in Cincinnati at the prince of Cincinnati chili, which is Camp Washington.
Nice.
And I did have a cheese. Well, this is not what you think of as chili. This is the Greek, the very thin meat sauce, almost like a hot dog meat sauce that's got a bit of a nutmeggy profile. It very unusual. It's got an allspice and nutmeg kind of undertone. It goes over spaghetti and then with that shredded cheese, and then you can add kidney beans, you can add onions, there's a three-way, four-way, five-way, etc. And it started in Cincinnati, the Depression, and it's an institution, but it's an acquired taste.
Yeah,
it should have stayed there in the Depression. That stuff is horrible.
I disagree. I disagree.
That's okay. We stopped at that Skyline on the way back.
Camp Washington. Wow. Go to Camp Washington on the west side. The best. Everything else is secondary.
I'll give it a try next time.
And I will even put Gold Star ahead of Skyline.
Well, anything is ahead of Skyline.
Sid. You've created a Cincinnati chili debate.
Yeah, the pasta was like
horrible. Yeah. Well, the meatball recipe I put up because that we call that the undefeated sweet and sour meatball recipe. There was a period where every time I would make it, the Eagles would win. And so they became the undefeated sweet and sour meatballs. And I forgot to put them up before the season started. And so for anybody whose team got beat, it's my fault. Because if I had put that recipe up last Wednesday or Thursday, you would have won on Sunday.
There you go. I got to say,
too funny.
I do have to tell you, though, that in Lexington I have this week, I've been eating at some pretty decent restaurants. And I'll give them a shout out. Actually, a few weeks ago when I was in Lexington, to visit John Sakura that night, I ate for the first time. I ate at Jeff Ruby's, right? Yeah, Jeff Ruby's, which is really good. But this particular trip, I ate. At dinner with David and Gordo at Tony's, which is food's pretty good there. Yeah.
Yeah, we've heard good things about Tony's.
The next day, I had dinner with Liam O'Rourke, who's the director of Bloodstock at Windstar. I had dinner with him at Frank and Dino's, which is also very good. And that's right next to Dudley. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And by the way, when you go to these places, all you see are, the horse people are all there. Like at when we had dinner with David and Gordo and Sherry DeVoe at the table. Another table, Leslie Ward was there with the Breeze Easy people. At Frank and Dino's, as I was walking in, Boyd Browning was walking in. I went in. And tons of horse people. John Sadler was there, Terry Finley, of West Point. Cormack was there. David Ngorda was there again too, with his mom Dottie. There's a ton of people there, and in fact, there's a gentleman named O. King Hackley who listens to your show.
I met King for the first time on Monday.
Well, guess what? I met him too on Monday, and then when I was at Frank and Dino's, he was there. I didn't know it, and I'm eating with Liam O'Rourke, and the hostess comes over and says, "There's somebody who would like to buy us drinks," and I thought it was a friend of Liam's, so I said, "Hey, that's great. I walk in here with you, and you know people, and they're getting us drinks." Well, anyway, it turns out we didn't know who it was, but then King Hackley comes to the table, and it was he who had sent us the drinks.
So, you're in town. You're in town half a dozen times a year, and you're the conduit to free cocktails.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Sue Finley and the TDN were there. Oh, and you're not going to believe this. So I walk out of Frank and Dino's to go home and to the parking lot, and of course I have to walk past Dudley's, which is right next door. Outside of the table was Donato, Lanny, Craig Burnick, and Barry Weisbord. And so they all come. Donato gives me a hug. I'm chit-chatting with Donato, and in fact, I had to warn Donato. I said, "Donato, by the way, my column tomorrow is going to be on David Ngorda," which just is a joke, two bloodstock agents. And while we're talking, Debbie, who owns Dudley, sees me, comes walking out, gives me a big hug. And, of course, in Dudley's, there's a column I wrote that she's framed in the men's room that gets all this Twitter action every time somebody sees it. So it was a big laugh. But in this town, it's like you can't go to any of these restaurants, bro, without running into all these horse people.
Sure. Oh, no doubt. Exactly. It's Saratoga season and Keeneland with a sales side. When you're in Ocala, it's the same way. The boutique meets. I mean, the community and really the traveling. The traveling circus or the movable feast, as it were.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that circuit thing is a good analogy, too, because it's like the Formula One circuit. They go from one city to the other city, run into the city. I'm just saying that I'm not a big fan, but, I assume it's the same way. And, of course, here at Keeneland, ran into all these people you never see, the Coolmore people. It's great. It's really good to see them. And sometimes to chat with them moments away from, the actual heat of the battle, whether it's racing or bidding on the sale. And you get a human side to all these people, too. It puts a real feeling to it, because a lot of times you just see the names of these people and, whatever personalities are shaped either by them or others on social media or articles, and you speak to the people directly and it's a whole different story.
Two things about that, Sid, that I'll include, and part of it is tied to being here at Kentucky Downs, and because Kentucky Downs season abuts the sale, you, for starters, at the sale, from what I saw Monday, Tuesday, and Sunday afternoon when I went, to make sure the broadcast position worked and all that kind of thing, the intensity. And I think yesterday, what did I call it? The sense of urgency that was going on, that pervaded Monday's action and yesterday's, Everybody was no nonsense and very focused, and they're hustling from the hill into the ring, to the back ring, into the main portion of the pavilion. Tony Lacey and Cormack and then yesterday Jessica Martini all noting that they have not seen that arena, that ring, as packed with nearly every seat taken. They haven't seen that in ages. So the intensity was really high. So then when it comes time to relax and to let the steam out of the pressure cooker, the conviviality is predictable. And then here at Kentucky Downs, one of the things that really appeals about this venue, especially coming off from Saratoga, is how relaxed everybody is, and that includes being dressed down and hanging out at these picnic tables and under these under this long pavilion, and the horsemen are here, and they're just they're sitting with, whether they're sitting with owners or they're sitting with mixed tables, it really has, yesterday Joe and I were just sitting talking, and Brendan Walsh came up, he had just saddled a horse. There's opportunities. Not everything has to be around the game, has to be formal and buttoned down and tense.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I was just listening to you while you were talking and just shaking my head, because you really sketched it the right way when you're actually at these places and not reading about it with different angles painted, depending on politics or competition, or just flat out negative stuff that you might see on social media. You actually get a chance to interact with some of these participants in a setting that's just convivial.
Yep. Oh, and I thought Tony Lacey yesterday, we had those back-to-back conversations with Cormack, who really kind of outlined the dollars and cents and the statistical side of it. And then Tony Lacey fleshed out kind of the human element and the the personality element. And one thing he kept kind of referring back to is participation in this business, in this game, in this sport, in this industry, however you define the endeavor of thoroughbred horse racing. It's supposed to be fun, and it's supposed to be satisfying, and we say it all the time, the highs are higher than any other highs, the lows are lower than almost any other lows. And I haven't mentioned this specifically in a while, but I've maintained for years that one of the things that is both an attractive feature of the game and one of its one of its potential detriments, people are afraid of this as a lifestyle, and they the people that are critics of the game essentially are afraid to take the chances that breeders, owners, trainers, horse players, track operators, this is the biggest high wire act there is. And in this day and age, it takes daredevils to be involved. And people are intimidated and scared of that. And so when you're intimidated and scared, you criticize and belittle. And that's something we face as an industry, because people are put off by having to to test their own limits.
Yeah, no, it's well put about the participants in this game, the risk taking and the day to day uncertainty, and it's not your typical lifestyle. It's not.
Yep.
It's easy to have your quote unquote safe lifestyle and comment on it, and it's another thing to actually be a participant and to and to deal with, and I'll use your words because I think they're really on point. It is the ultimate high wire act. It's a lifestyle because not only are you, you know, you're dealing with these horses on a daily, day-to-day basis, but they're your livelihood. Things happen to horses, and you know, it may be a name that something happens that's unfortunate and people make fun of, but for people actually in this business, it's the devastation is as great as on the opposite end, winning, you know, an allowance race at one level or a graded stakes, whatever level you're playing at, you know, that's the high wire, the wins versus more losses than you can take.
Exactly. Exactly right. Well, there'll be another 10 days plus.
I'm surprised I didn't see you there on Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday.
I was in the back ring, Sid. I didn't realize you were already there. I thought when I saw that text from you, I thought you weren't getting there until Tuesday.
No, in fact, I was there Sunday, and it was on Sunday that I was with David and Gordo because I wanted to do my column on him. So I was there with him Sunday. I flew in specifically just so that he and I could walk around and inspect horses together.
Nice.
Then I was there Monday. I was, you know, Tuesday, and then today is Wednesday. I'm here till I'm leaving Friday.
Nice. Well, I'm an idiot then because I just should have touched base again with you. But when you said, let's not do it. Let's wait till Wednesday.
Yeah, if you told me you were there, we would have met up. Where were you in the back?
I was in the back ring in that corner by, you know, where there's those tables, those little tables. There's like four of those big, heavy tables. I was right tucked in there underneath the three, you know, the outboards and just behind the announcer stand.
Oh, wow.
Huh. Yeah, it's crazy that I didn't see you. That's kind of funny. I mean, it just shows you how packed the place was and
yeah,
what was going on.
Because
it was ridiculous. I mean, I and it's funny because and Tony said it to me afterward yesterday after the show was over. He said, "What'd you think?" I said, "It was great." He said, "Well, we'll try to maybe figure out a way to get you more traffic." The fact is that everybody was on the hill on, you know, the auction didn't start till 1 o'clock yesterday or Monday. And so they're not coming through the ring at that point. Some people may have been walking, you know, one direction or another, but everybody's pulling horses out of the barn. So listen, for a first go around, you know, first time I've done it, it was a mammoth hit. And I just loved it. It'll be part of whenever we do a new thing, it ends up becoming part of the rotation.
Yeah, no, that's good. It should be part of your rotation.
Yeah, I've always wanted to do it. And in fact, Tony even said after Breeders' Cup, the unique opportunity to stay around after Breeders' Cup for Night of Stars and then for their first couple of sessions for the November bloodstock sale. So I'll probably hang around 3-4 days after Breeders' Cup as well.
Oh, man. Huh. So I might see you then if I come down.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, and because it's so now, you know, now with you being a Floridian, it's just, you know.
Bro, you're gonna get a kick out of this story. So, you know, like I cut my hair to come down. Well, you know, I cut my hair to be somewhat presentable in civilized society. But I guess my hair is so long, considering the population of Kentucky, which is, you know, very tight and short. And so I was still getting the long hair comments, you know. And if you saw me, you'd say, oh, my God, man, cut your hair.
Well, listen, you're down there in Florida, and it's a whole different – it's a different vibe. You relaxed and – You got kind of the Jimmy Buffett sort of style now that's from Brooklyn hipster to Key West cool you know, kickback.
That's right. That's right. So
I love it.
It's funny.
Well, I we'll check in, Sid, next week. We'll be, you know, deep into the sale next Wednesday, and I'll be home, actually. It'll be the first day I'll be back home after 2.5 weeks. So we'll continue to monitor, and we'll watch for taking stock in the TDN, and, of course, the TDN coverage like we had with Jessica
and my story's
yesterday.
Out today, just, by the way.
About David?
It's out today.
Excellent.
FYI.
All right. We will pull it up. Sid Fernando, everybody.
All right, man,
Sire Watch Pedigree Focus. Thanks, buddy. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. And the Hill & Dale Stallions off to an outstanding start, including some Ghost Zappers and some Kittens Joys.
Perfect example, Steve, of what you were talking about. The passion is you. You left a corporate job because you love this game. You had an opportunity. And anybody who's successful, I find in life, you define successful by their happiness and their joy.
Yeah.
You know, they love what they're doing. And you leave one thing to get to that level, and you're a perfect example of that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The opportunity to get involved in the game was, it sort of actually was an outgrowth of... my food business. I mean, that it was a very strange. You couldn't have really authored what happened to me. But I certainly, when the opportunity presented itself, I knew. You know, when John Parada said to me, after I was introduced by Gus Alonso, introduced me to JJ and John, and John said, do you want to be involved? Do you want to co-host this? I said, yes. I'd waited. I mean, I had broadcast the Colgate, and I'd always wanted to do this. I mean, it had always been, the potential, an option or sports right. And, just out of college, things went in a different direction. So, in my 40s, to be afforded the opportunity, it was like Roy Hobbs.
Yeah.
You don't start playing ball at your age, you retire.
Well, you're a perfect example of what we talk about all the time here, in life in general and in this game. People that are successful, especially in this game, traveling around, they're cooks and they're chefs, right, in every walk of every professional industry. And the people that are successful are usually the chefs, And the ones that love it, and the ones that will give up, the ones that will walk the high wire act, the ones that will sacrifice, because they love doing it.
And that's true of everybody. Everybody that does anything in this game, including betting on them. That's high wire act is the right description. A couple of quick notes as we head to the break. If you didn't see yesterday, I wish I had known when I saw. Michael Blowen, Jonesboro, the wonderful Jonesboro, has found a home at Old Friends.
Oh, sweet.
The son of Mom's Command, so a Peter Fuller product. Really,
was standing in Arkansas. Wasn't
absolutely
it?
Was. Absolutely was. It had gotten a little old. We got to talk about the Prince of Wales result yesterday. Josie Carroll wins the Prince of Wales at Fort Erie, and more. Let's take a break. We'll come right back. Only break of the morning. Back to Kentucky Downs after this. Dick Powell's going to join us. Joe Galante sitting in. EPO Equine. You're going to hear Joe.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses.